Okay, welcome everybody to the next episode of Epic Failin', and today we have with us mayoral candidate Jeremy Farkas. Hello, Jeremy, how are you?
I'm pretty good. Thanks so much for having me. I'm recovering from the Ironman over the weekend, but otherwise feeling good.
Oh, right on. You did that.
I wasn't feeling up to the swim, but they gave us the chance to do the bike and the run, and it was good. Pretty hot, pretty smoky, but it was nice to kind of shake out the cobwebs.
I bet that would be really, really, really tough with the smoke and everything. I've been noticing it. It's been a great excuse for me not to get out and do my jogging, that's for sure. The Ironman, so they didn't do the swimming part?
Practically nobody had the time to be able to do a lot of the swimming practice and stuff like that. And I sort of just gauged my own skill level and my own training level. And I figured I wasn't going to jump into a situation where I might be putting myself or others at risk. But that's sort of a judgment call you have to make with events like that. And it was very sad to learn that one of the athletes passed away during the swim.
So no. I didn't read up on that. But yeah, that's totally unfortunate. You've been doing that long?
I've been doing the triathlon races sort of bigger and smaller over the past, I'd say maybe 7-8 years. And it's a good way to keep mentally fit, physically fit. Pretty busy work schedule for me, but you can always sneak in a run on a break and during council meetings or that sort of thing. And it's a good chance to actually listen to podcasts and kind of just mentally clear yourself out from work and all the other challenges that are happening in your personal life.
A busy guy if you're doing that and running for mayor. What got you into politics anyway, into city politics?
I never thought that I would want to be a politician when I grew up, but I think a lot about my family experience. I grew up in East Calgary and Dover. Didn't have very much growing up, but I had to work from a very early age. And I think about my own family story. So they arrived to Canada as immigrants from communist Hungary in 1956. They could have gone anywhere in the world, but they chose to come to Calgary, to Alberta, to Canada, because it was the place which offered them the most promise of any other place on earth. And I think back to some of my early experiences, like my grandmother, my Nagmama on my father's side. She would often go to her local city hall office, and she had a beautiful garden at the time, and she'd bring fresh flowers to her local alderwoman. And for me, as a young Canadian, it was interesting to kind of get to see city hall. It was interesting to speak to her. And as my father put it, she would always try to contribute, to give back, and she would bring these fresh flowers, basically, because the people who worked at City Hall were people that you could count on, people that you could trust, people you could go to if you ever had a problem. And I didn't think back then that I wanted to be a city councilor, but I kind of knew that I wanted to be somebody like that my Nagmama looked up to, somebody you could go to if you're ever in trouble. It's interesting that I actually ended up being a city councilor. But now as an adult, I kind of look back on her experience, and it's pretty eye-opening to me because she came from a regime which was corrupt with politicians, police who were corrupt, and a government that really was no longer working for its people. And it's only now as an adult that I can really appreciate and respect how much of a leap that it must have taken her for her to want to be Canadian, to learn to trust the government, to learn to trust her elected officials. And as a young kid, naively, I sort of thought, of course, the people working at the government are the ones that you're supposed to be able to go to. But it's not like that for everyone around the world. And it's very unique what we've been able to build here in Canada and Calgary. So that's one reason that I was at least, the door was open to me in terms of public office that way. But I would say the big reason was back in 2015. Every year there's this competition called the Hackathon, where it's mostly young people, about 200 or 300 of us, who are basically locked in a room for a weekend. You're given a certain problem to solve, and whoever comes out of the weekend with the best idea, best app that they've invented, or business that they've started, gets a big cash prize and basically a blessing to go on and change the world. And it's I was fortunate in 2015 to join this competition with a bunch of other up-and-coming entrepreneurs, software engineers, coders, programmers. And I was very fortunate to join a team that eventually won first place. And we came up with an app that we thought would have been able to make some money, would have been able to get us a job and hopefully offer something of value to our fellow Calgarians. But unfortunately, we live in Calgary. And because of some of the City Hall regulations, particularly around open data, we couldn't get that platform off the ground. And it was by the end of 2015 that I reached out to some of my other team members, and I asked them what they were up to. And many of them had actually left Calgary for other places like Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal, Hamilton, elsewhere, because they were more embracing of ideas of like that. So we have the story that we tell ourselves of Calgary being entrepreneurial, open for business with a can-do attitude. And to be clear, our city is definitely those things, and Calgarians are definitely those things, but our city hall isn't. And for me, that whole experience was really the straw that broke the camel's back. I was a bit frustrated by the experience, and I wanted to run so that other young people like me who might be in a similar situation don't ever have to face those kind of barriers again. So that sums it up. One big reason is my Nagmama, and the little reason, the straw that broke the camel's back, was just sort of beating my head against city hall bureaucracy.
That makes sense. I mean, I come from a long line of entrepreneurs too, in family business. My family started Connect Amusements, or owns Connect Amusements, which is trophies, party supplies, basically any kind of event that you're holding, you're probably going to, you look at the back of any ticket that you get, you know, keep this coupon or 50-50 ticket, there's Connect Amusements on the back of it. So I know what it's like, you know, coming from that self-employment route, and some of the frustrations that I hear other business owners talking about with the city hall has had. So yeah, that's definitely a good reason why to jump in. But you have to then forfeit your seat as a council, you know, your current job, in order to even run, right? So that's risky, right? Like, is that, you know, you have to be pretty confident that you got this in the bag.
Yeah, I think there's a big risk involved, right? It's loser leaves town. It's you have to be all in on one position. You can't, it's not like the US where you can run for two positions at the same time. So for me, it was always about making the most impact. And I felt that based on the experience and the record that I've been able to develop, I think I can offer an alternative. I can offer change on the ballot for Calgarians who are really looking for a different way of doing things. And I think over the past 4 years, I've really proven to my constituents that I'm eager and willing and able to stand up for financial responsibility, for transparency, for economic opportunity. And look, it hasn't always been easy. I think back to my first day on the job, a city councilor told me that I had to take the golden pension. But I kept thinking back to a conversation I had with one of my neighbors. She asked me, once you're downtown, are you only going to think of yourself, or are you going to think about me? So for me, turning down that pension, it was by far the most financially costly decision that I ever made. But it was also, I would say, the most politically costly, because it really set me on, I would say, a collision course with an out-of-touch establishment that in so many ways has put its own interests ahead of those of Calgarians. For us to be able to get out of this and to rebuild post-COVID, we're going to need leadership that we can count on. We're going to need to get back to basics, focus on financial responsibility. And I think I know enough about how the system works at City Hall to be able to change it, while also proving that I've not been a slave to the system. So I'm willing to support the City Hall establishment when I think they're getting it right. But, you know, through the last 4 years, I've definitely stood up for my constituents when it hasn't been easy. And it's put a lot of personal pressure on me as well as my family.
Yeah. Oh, I bet. You know, I look at, you know, with everything that's going on in politics, you know, here and south of the border, I look at it and you always kind of wonder, like, who in their right mind would want to open themselves up like a politician does, right? Like you could be even some of the what we consider the best politicians that we've had in the last decade or so, they even come under a lot of scrutiny.
It can be tough, but it's what you signed up for. And I think that after a certain point, it seems like elected office, it became a career rather than a service. I welcome the scrutiny. I welcome all of that, because at the end of the day, spending public money, you deserve to be accountable. And I just kind of think back to kind of the culture that's been built at City Hall. One of the other counselors told me that one of my promises that I made on the campaign trail was just impossible. And I asked them, well, which promise was this? And I said, it was my commitment to host a monthly town hall meeting. I asked, well, what's so strange about that? And they sort of walked me through it and said, you're going to pack a room somewhere out in the community. You're going to stand in front of the audience and you're going to give the audience the microphone. They asked me, what are you? Are you crazy? But you know, over the past 4 years, I've hosted upwards of 50 town hall meetings just like that. And you know, it's been very humbling. It's been an exceptional opportunity for me to stay grounded, to stay focused, to make sure that I have my marching orders loud and clear for my constituents. And I think it's having that support and having their encouragement and that direct line to the people I work for that's really given me a lot of that courage, that confidence to be able to stand up at City Hall and say, you know, we need to change how we're doing things. I think I was one of two votes against the 7.5% tax increase during the COVID-19 pandemic, the first wave. And I just knew based on what I was hearing out there in the real world from people being out of work, entrepreneurs, business owners struggling, that that type of tax increase was just not justifiable. Over the past 4 years, I've just been very, very fortunate to be able to have that direct line of communication with my constituents. And, you know, after a certain point, I think the public is not looking for perfection from politicians, but they're looking for a willingness to listen and to learn. And for me, I'm never the smartest person in the room, and I'm so fortunate to be surrounded by folks who do have the ideas and have the suggestions to be able to get our city back on track. And that's really my focus through this campaign, is to advocate for financial responsibility, for transparency, and most of all, just getting Calgarians back to work.
That's always the best way to kind of look at it. You know, you don't always have to have the answer offhand, but to be able to know where to go for the answer, right?
I remember one of the first questions I was asked at one of these town hall meetings. I was debating, well, I don't know the answer, but should I try to BS my way out of it? And I just knew that if I don't have the answer, I'm not going to try to make something up. So I said, I don't know the answer and I'll get back to you. And I felt like it was just quiet for a couple seconds. You could hear a pin drop. But then the audience sort of applauded, and the person who asked the question said, okay, here's my email address. Give me a shout next week. And I think after a certain point, you have to give the public credit because they're willing to have patience with you as long as you're approaching things in good faith.
Yeah, absolutely. Saying that, it's been really interesting, especially being in real estate, being a realtor here in Calgary. The pandemic hasn't brought what I thought it would bring. I thought it would be a big slowdown, and especially because right before the pandemic, you know, there was oil and gas, and it really, you know, it wasn't looking good there either. And so I looked at it, and I actually had a physical response, like when I heard, you know, flights were shutting down. I'm like, oh my God, this is my career. You know, what am I going to do? But lucky for my career and the people within my industry, there was a bit of a spark there, right? People said, okay, well, I'm going to be working from home maybe. And they started, you know, moving around, and maybe they had more disposable income if they weren't going out shopping and whatnot, and they were, you know, maybe saving them. I have not a whole lot of idea what it was. I think it was low interest rates as well. There's maybe just a powder keg of the perfect situation where people said, okay, let's take it and make a move up or move down. And it was affordable for them to do so. But saying that, Calgary still is sort of in this limbo, and I think we can beat ourselves up a lot and be like, we're oil dependent, and you know, what are we going to do now that there's no oil? You know, and it's like, but quite often, you know, I'm driving and I see Calgary's backdrop with the mountains and everything. We are still an amazing city. What do you think we have to do to like show the world and showcase Calgary to the world that we are the place to be?
It comes down to safety and affordability. So on the safety piece, I think there's this really ideological agenda that's being pushed by some to defund and abolish the police. And I think that that's the absolute wrong direction to go. I know that some of the other councillors who are running for mayor are pushing this. But for me, I launched a petition to defend our police and to hold them accountable for their budget. Not many know this, but it's caused a lot of issues for our downtown because Calgary is the only major North American city without a permanent downtown police station. That station closed due to budget around the same time as the drug site opened, which has caused a lot of problems for our downtown. So I'd be advocating for our essential services, getting back to basics, making sure that our first responders have the resources that they need. And then the next piece is around affordability. we have so much good going for us. And I think with these huge tax increases, about a doubling on the residential tax rate over the past 10 years are just not sustainable. So I think, again, how do we attract that talent? How do we attract especially those small business owners, those entrepreneurs? I think it's through providing stability and safety, making sure that we have those security investments in place, that the taxes are at a reasonable level, and that you're getting good value for your quality services. And another piece I think has been a bit misguided as far as city council's approach is this basically this guidebook for communities. Many people haven't followed this issue, but it's basically, in my view, a very one-size-fits-all approach to planning and development, which I believe the long-term aim is basically the elimination of single-family zoning. So when I think about the fact that many people, they're purchasing their home, that's the largest investment that many families will ever make in their lifetimes. I think changing the rules and that bait and switch, I think, is the absolute wrong direction to go. So for me, I'm very live and let live. I think if you want to live in a downtown high rise, you should have that choice for yourself. But for me, wanting to live in a single family neighborhood, I should have that choice for myself as well. And it's also, it's not just a matter of respect for the type of lifestyle that, say, an individual might want to live, but I think it's also really essential for economic success. So when we're competing, say, against Toronto or Vancouver for talent, one of the best things that we have going for us is that affordability of housing, being able to offer single-family homes within a reasonable commute to our downtown or to other employment centers. So why would you want a council that's undermining these things, defunding the police, getting rid of single-family zoning, things like this? I think that we need to play to our strengths, and that's one of the biggest reasons that I'm running in this next election, is to try to give positive change and to play to our strengths rather than erode our competitive advantages.
Something that we've been talking about within my industry, certainly since I got licensed like 14 years ago, I remember we were talking about, you know, changing things from if it was R1 zoned to being, whether you do an R2 or a R1S, right? Where you're just we're allowed to have a suite. And there's definitely a big split in dichotomy in it. And there's the people that say, hey, I want to buy in a single family home area. That's what I'm expecting. And then there's the other side where it's like, okay, well, I bought my home. And if I want a mother-in-law or a elderly, you know, family member, or perhaps a teenager that's, you know, going to university to be able to live in there and have their own suite, that's one thing, right? And then there's a whole renting it outside as well.
Yeah, no, I would say that there's a material difference between, say, having a basement suite to be able to have, say, your elderly parents living with you versus the person next door tearing down a bungalow and putting up, say, a 4 or 5-story apartment, right? So there's a material difference, some of these development proposals. And for me, I've never really had an issue with, especially those who own the property, to be able to help make their mortgage to be able to rent it out, say, to a student, or to be able to have a live-in caregiver. So I think it's an important issue, but I think it's really important for these decisions around planning to be driven by Calgarians rather than being made with, say, the best interests of the development industry in mind.
Yeah, and then that's even the further step, which I guess you clarified for me just there, is that rather than having a single family community, and then throwing up a, you know, 6-floor apartment building, right? Yeah, that's definitely something that could be problematic, or, you know, you see it in valuations, right? If you're backing onto an apartment building where you have 50 people looking in at your backyard, it's not as desirable, just plain and simple. Along those lines, make it a little more fun here. What do you like to do other than running when you're not running for mayor, or running, doing a marathon, or a, what was it you just did, an Ironman? What do you like to do with your time?
I represent a lot of the Beltline, the downtown. So there's a number of great local restaurants, and I'm a bit of a foodie that way. So just really enjoy trying new places and that sort of thing. And that fits into the triathlon, because once you've finished a race like that, you're really hungry.
Calgary has a great food scene. In fact, I've heard to be like one of the, you know, premier food scenes in Canada for sure. There's a show on Netflix. It was like a sort of like Iron Chef. I can't remember what it was called, but there was a Calgary chef that made it onto the show. And he was with, it was a Japanese fusion place. I can't remember the name of the place now. Anyway, but he made it quite far. He made it right to the very end. So yeah, it was really good. Do you have a favorite place? Is there a thing that you loved going more so than anything else?
Oh gosh, I would say growing up in East Calgary, you could just drop me on, say, 17th Avenue at between 36th Street and 52nd Street, southeast there. So many great places, shawarma, noodles, pho, all that sort of stuff. I would have a hard time picking a certain favorite. And I think as I'm basically campaigning in a lot of other parts of the city, I don't think at this point I could pick a favorite. But as far as me being right now the Ward 11 counselor, I would say one of my favorites has to be 10 Foot Henry's in the Beltline.
Okay, I have to check them out. And what do they do?
A lot of interesting, mostly like vegetarian focused stuff, but some meat options too, and just really unique presentation and really good serving sizes and a nice patio as well. So just really, really nice atmosphere there and really great service always. But again, it's so hard to pick a certain favorite, and I'm so fortunate to be able to go through the doors of a lot of local small businesses these days.
Oh yeah, and I have a passion for that too. I have a passion just going out to try and find any new local small business, and it turns into like flavor of the week for me, because if anybody turned around and asked me that question, I think I would do the same thing you did. And I'm like, I don't know, man. There's so many good ones. What do you want? Yeah, so it's like I'm always finding a new great place, either whether it's pho or sushi, or you know, it could be anything. With the different industries that we have here in Calgary, you know, we have a little bit of film. I have interviewed Michael Peterson a couple times on my podcast, and he's responsible for movies such as Harpoon and Bloodthirsty, and you know, critically acclaimed movies. So we have quite the film industry here within Calgary. But what other industries do you see, you know, with maybe a bit of a vacancy? Well, oil and gas, where do you see us heading, and what do you think we should really try and promote or pursue to have come our way?
I would say that there's been this focus recently for City Hall to basically using these slush funds to tax existing businesses to death, try to pick winners and losers and bring in a new business with a certain tax break, but at the expense of our current small business owners. So I would say that I would see the part of the responsibility of this next mayor and council is to advocate and champion for the existing small business owners, the existing entrepreneurs. We have so many great homegrown success stories that are often ignored. And it's very frustrating for them to not get their story told, and for this current leadership to sort of be all in on somebody from the outside coming to save us. Like there's this narrative that if only Amazon moves their headquarters here, that we'll be saved. If only we got the Olympics, we'd be saved. So I would say a lot of my focus would be trying to cultivate and allow our current businesses to be able to survive and thrive. Again, it just doesn't make sense to tax existing business to death and then try to use that money to try to pick winners and losers in private business. So my vision for Calgary is to be the best place on earth for the world's smartest minds to solve the world's toughest problems. We've proven that we can do this, and we do this every single day in oil and gas. So I think that focus on energy and technology is a strong piece. But I think in the future, there's the global demand for energy is only going to increase. And there's going to be, I would say, a desire for the product that Alberta offers from our human rights record, from our environmental record. So I think a big piece is to be able to tell Calgary's story, and especially our efforts for sustainability are going to be really crucial. And then next, in terms of the quality office space that we have, I think that we have a problem that many other cities would die for in terms of having that quality space on offer for any business to be able to relocate tomorrow and to be able to have a great ability to succeed. But I think until we get the safety piece for our downtown addressed, primarily around security of people and from crime and policing, we're not going to be able to market that product much further. So again, my focus would be, if we're addressing the downtown, would be to make sure that it's safe and affordable for businesses, and that there's the confidence from both employers and clients to want to go to our downtown.
Okay, yeah, it's very true. Like, we have something very unique in Calgary. We have one of the world's most expansive plus 15. That's pretty crazy in itself, right? To be able to go from building to building. And
there are a lot of pieces around other industries, like you had mentioned with film. We don't have the ability to give those types of tax credits. So I think we need to continue to be advocating through the provincial government to make sure that there's a framework in place to be able to encourage those big productions. And I think we're starting to see that with HBO and Netflix and practically the whole industry. Their eyes are on Alberta and Calgary in particular, with our film center and beautiful backdrops. And we have a lot to offer. So I think part of it is just shoe leather, economic development, going on the road, pitching Calgary, aggressively making the sell rather than hoping that people will come to us.
I agree with that. I really like what you said about rather than throwing huge tax advantages to come here and then putting it on the backs of small business or existing businesses here, I think a more fair taxation system is better. What are your thoughts on having a taxation system too, like for business, where there's almost a incentive for beautification? So if you go out and buy a property right now and it's maybe, you know, a piece of garbage, right? That, you know, or something highly undesirable in an area that might need some revitalization, but you go in there and you put some money into it, all of a sudden now your taxes, you know, you've improved the property, now your taxes are going to be higher, right? Rather than having the incentive to go in and, you know, maybe beautify a property and maybe have some tax incentives come your way because you have done so.
Yeah, I'd have to take a look more at the specifics there. My understanding is that it would probably, that sort of thing would be covered under just the current corporate tax system as a loss that or an expense that you can write off. The problem is at the city level, we don't have a lot of money to work with generally. So we need to make sure that if we are spending the money, it's on things that every Calgarian benefits from. So I'd be open to the concept, but I'd have to be looking at more of the particulars there in terms of what the benefit is, who pays and so on. And I wouldn't be comfortable at this point without actually seeing the numbers.
Yeah. It's an idea that I heard here a couple of weeks ago, and I thought it was a neat way to look at it, but yeah, definitely without a structure in place, you wouldn't be able to comment on it for sure. But that's good. So on that note, Calgary's seen its ups and downs, and certainly globally, we've seen our ups and downs with the pandemic. We're coming out of the pandemic. I am really surprised that our numbers are as low as they are after the stampede and everything. I was down at the stampede and it was like really interesting to see, you know, people out and whatnot. I don't know if there's going to be any other closures. You know, I have no idea what to predict in that way. But anything you'd like to share with Calgarians and say, you know, any kind of words of advice or, you know, support local or?
I would say always support local. I think it's your local bake shop, it's your local noodle place. These are the folks that sponsor the local baseball team, right? It's not the big businesses. It's these local entrepreneurs, these local small business owners who contribute every day. On the COVID question, I think we need to stick to the science. Vaccines are effective and they work. And to have politicians try to stir up fear and to undermine our public health officials is really irresponsible. I think city council doesn't know anything that Dr. Hinshaw doesn't, and Dr. Hinshaw is best positioned to make calls such as these. So us as politicians, we're not doctors, and we need to stop acting like we are. So we can't pick and choose when to support the science, and Dr. Hinshaw has made the call that the masks are no longer mandatory. And if people think that she and her team have got it wrong, then I think they need to prove it rather than try to stir people up based on emotional arguments. So at this point, I would not be supporting bringing back the city mask bylaw, especially if Dr. Hinshaw has reviewed the issue and says that it should no longer be mandatory.
Yeah, and that's the thing I think we got to all remember, you know, whether you're a jerky podcast host or whether you're a politician, you know, the proof is in the science of everything, right? And that's probably the best way to look at it. So for our listeners out there too, just because we're coming to an end, I'm surprised how fast this has gone. First of all, election day. And actually, this is a good question. I'm gonna do this because I've asked a couple other people this. I find when it comes to civic elections, it's name recognition, which you have, right? Because your name is out there quite a bit, even as a counselor. But I find that people, when it comes to voting for a counselor, they have no idea where to even start. So what are you doing to market yourself in running for mayor? Just because it kind of relates to business. And so what are some things that you do to market yourself? And especially, you know, in a world where, you know, a lot of people get to the ballot box and they're just going of, well, that name I've heard before, check.
Well, I think you have to focus on the issues, right? You have to speak to what's important to Calgarians. And right now, I think it's about the economy. It's about financial responsibility. It's about transparency. It's about adequate essential services, things like giving the police the resources that they need, having fair rules around community development and zoning. For us, we've been going hard over the past 11 months or so, doing door knocking, flyer deliveries, lawn signs, online town halls, one-on-one meetings, Q&As, meet and greets, things like that. So pretty much all of the above as far as that strategy goes. And it's a pretty busy, hectic schedule, but I think it's really nice to see some signs of life in this town. And really, with all the people that I get to meet and the interactions I have, it leaves me so optimistic for our future and the prospects of our city going forward. So it's the best chicken soup of the soul is actually getting out there and meeting people and to interact with them, because I think we've been down over the past year and a half for sure. But I think there's so much good going for us, and the foundations are exceptional for the city, and we have so much more to look forward to.
Absolutely. So with that in mind, what is the message that you want Calgarians to remember about Jeremy Farkas when they hit the polls in October? Is it October? October.
Well, I would say I have the record and the credibility following through on my promises, focusing on financial responsibility, on transparency, on economic opportunity. I learned pretty early I can't be all things to all people. I try to be direct as far as my views, be consistent, advocating for my constituents. And I believe I have that record over the past 4 years of standing up for the people who elected me. Again, growing up in East Calgary and Dover, never forgetting where I came from, focusing on elected office being a service rather than a career. And I think I've followed through on my promises, even when it hasn't been the best for me personally or politically. But I've done so because I think a promise made is a promise kept. So I think this election is going to be the most important easily in Calgary's history, with the vast majority of city council changing over. And we need to elect leadership, a mayor and council that we can trust to get it done. The other candidates are going to be saying a lot of the same things around the economy, around the taxes, around the budget. But I think I offer something that they don't, which is a proven record, the credibility, actually following through on these things over the past 4 years, rather than being a part of the problem for that much time and then coming to the table during an election year saying that they've seen the light. So for me, I've been consistent through that. And it's, again, in the spirit of humility. I'm never the smartest person in the room, and I'm so fortunate to be able to have such a great team of supporters, friends, volunteer, family to be able to assist. And I would just welcome anybody and everybody to get involved, to reach out to me anytime if I can be of help.
That's awesome. That's really, really good. And where can people find you if they want to find out a little bit more about you?
And you can visit our website, www.jeromy.ca.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much, Jeremy. And until next time, stay epic.
Thanks again for listening to Epic Phelan. If you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe, give me a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Real Ryan Phelan, and visit my website at thecalgaryrealestateguy.com. Until next time, stay epic.